Welcome, everyone, to episode 400 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And once again, we're back with another monthly albums review. This time around, it is for October 2024. Jeremy Weltman is back with his insight. I'm here to give you some of my opinion. And here we go.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
So episode 400, I tried to book a guest, reached out to a bunch of different people, got multiple different things. We're working on this, can't do it. We're out on tour, can't do it. Going out on tour, that one I figured I would wait until they came back from tour. I don't know, just so many things that come up while people are away from home, where the internet is shoddy and you end up fighting to get something decent out of what they provide you. Anyway, so I figured I'd hold off on that, and that interview will be scheduled soon. I do have something scheduled tonight, and it should be cool. Focus on Metal just released episode 600, and it was funny because they were talking about how, you know, for this number episode, they had Joe Perry on, and they had this other person for this one and another episode, you know, and for 600, it was just the two of them talking. It was Scott and Richie just talking. And I could totally empathize with that because it's a lot of what I've done recently. And I know there are people that tell me, you need to get guests. That's how you're going to get people to catch or people to post about your show and get more people interested and this and that. And yeah, they're probably right. But time is the biggest factor, man. Just being able to fit everything in. I know that there are a lot of you that don't follow me on Patreon, where I do my other podcast, the Victor M. Ruiz podcast, where I talk about behind the scenes stuff, talk about shit that's going on in my life. Basketball, which is, you know, the last few years I've become a basketball coach. And so I probably bite off more than I could chew a lot of times. I try to straighten things out and try to get the right mix in there. But sometimes I just can't do everything that I want to do. And I'd love to do more interviews. And going forward for 2025, I do want to try to get more interviews in there. But man, I look at somebody like Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show, and he's doing all of these different interviews, and I'm super envious, to be honest. But anyway, going to do something that I haven't done in a long time, and that is a shout out to my patrons, because they are great. They help support and quote unquote keep the lights on, help certain things keep going here on the show. And they're a big part of, for example, 401. They're going to be a big part of that episode, which will be coming out in the next few days. Technical issues have prevented me from getting this out sooner. But anyway, real quickly here, I want to send a shout out to Pascal Schumacher, who's my latest patron, Sean Richmond, Chris Sinzak of Decibel Geek, Tony Espin, Anthony Mackey, Ed Ferguson, Johan Edistrom, Metal Dan, Jose Ruiz, Chris Vaglio, Gabriel Ruiz, Brad Dahl, Mike Jones, Jeremy Weltman, Stephen Hoker, and Stephen Saylor. Thank you guys so much for your support. You guys know it. I say it all the time. It means the world to me that you guys are supporting me, and it means the world to me that people are listening to this episode, episode 400, when there's a million other things that you could be listening to. You're still here. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Welcome one and all to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and joining me today is Mr. Jeremy Weltman. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you, Victor. It's getting really cold here in the UK at the moment, but we're going to cope with it for the winter months, getting to some Nordic death metal or similar, I reckon. What about yourself? How are you?
Yeah, it's the temperatures have dropped quite a bit here as well. So it snowed up in the mountains, looks like. You can feel that when you step outside the house. And yeah, either way, we'll have a hot plate of piping metal to go and warm us up during these winter months for sure. So we're back for our October 2024 albums review. This is always fun. This is for you lazy listeners who haven't checked out new music recently, and we're coming towards the end of the year. If you want to go back and check out some of the stuff that you've missed, just check out all of these shows that Jeremy and I have done throughout the year, and you can get caught up on some cool music that's come out this year. So again, this is October. Quite a few things that I listened to that we both listened to, actually. I think we overlap quite a bit this time around. But starting out with October 4th, we had new releases from Blood Incantation, DAD, Disneyland After Dark, The New Roses, Windrose, Mammoth Caravan, Hermano, or Hermano, if you want to pronounce it completely in English, The Native Howl, Texas Hippie Coalition, EPs from Motley Crue and Lords of Trident, and reissue from Mastodon. It is the 15th anniversary edition of Crack the Sky. Jeremy, what did you listen to for October 4th?
Yeah, so I began the month checking out a couple of releases on Napalm Records. The first one was a sort of unabashed album from the Italian band Leia. This stood off really on a sort of a bad note, really, and it sadly got quite worse. As you know, I'm a real power metal fan, but this is away from Firewind, believe me. It has its sort of dated references to Norse mythology. Bands that sort of do that well tend to be quite heavy, I think. And this was sort of prancy, dancy, keyboard influenced drivel. Sorry, guys, but I've no idea, you know, who you're appealing to beyond a few teenage adolescents. Just don't spend all of the album sales on a round of drinks. Sorry, it's not personal. The second Napalm offering, I think, was much better. It was Attracted to Danger by The New Roses. It contains, you know, good time melodic rock and roll, and it's apparently the band's sixth studio album to date. Strangely, they do sound a bit like a US band, I think, but they are, in fact, from Wiesbaden in Germany, which Michael Schenker would be able to pronounce better than me, I think. I suspect the singer Timmy Ruff might not be from Germany because he's, you know, he doesn't sing with any accented vocals. But whatever, they can write a good song or three. And while they aren't tearing down any houses, you know, they're a band I'd sort of enjoy seeing live, I think. There's some really sort of good choruses on the album to get the crowd singing along a bit. The title track has a sort of whiff of FM about it. And if it's heavier after Four Wheels has a riff that really sort of hits the spot. So, yeah, that was pretty good. I followed that up with the six-song EP Frostbitten Galaxy by Mammoth Caravan, which is on Blade Setter Records. This is a sludge doom band from Arkansas, and you'll notice I'm saying that because when I was a kid, I actually did a little bit of marketing and said Arkansas by accident. So apologies early on there. There's some variation on this sort of album. It has some proggier elements, a fair share of sort of brooding intros. It's got a very heavy, sort of groovy backline, so the listener, you know, on board for most of it. It's a hard listen though, really. It's got some sort of growly vocals on there, you know, really growly as well, which you know, sort of grates a little bit. But you know, the music shows a lot of promise. I just think if they could get a stronger metal singer in to actually sing the songs, maybe sort of mix it up a bit, you know, with the growls and the non growls, the clear vocals, you know, it'd be a winner really. But as it is, I guess back to the New Roses as Mike of the Week.
Okay. And since I was lucky enough to interview Tim Ruff from the New Roses a few years back, he is German. The thing is, Wiesbaden has a very, they have a very big military base, U.S. military base there. So he spoke English early on in life. And learned it directly from soldiers and people that were stationed there. So so that's why he speaks and sings with very little accent. So I listened to the DAD album, Speed of Darkness. I listened to the New Roses album. Four Wheels is, I think, the best track off of that. You mentioned that. And real quickly, I do want to mention that the album is called Troll Slayer, but the band is Windrose. So just...
Okay.
Yeah. just a quick correction there. Have you seen what they look like?
Yeah. No.
Okay. No? Okay.
I didn't get that far.
They look... Yeah, they look like characters out of He-Man, basically. What else? I listened to the Hermano album, also the Native Howl, and Texas Hippie Coalition. I can't say that there's any album that I didn't like. The Native Howl was more or less what I figured it would be, being that the duet with Lizzie Hale was the leading single, and obviously it has Lizzie Hale, who's a big name. It makes sense for them to release it with her because it's going to draw a certain audience there. Texas Hippie Coalition was okay. The Hermano was stoner rock. It was half live, half new track, so it was what you would expect from them and people that have been in and out of Caius, and that extended family. The New Roses is probably the, out of everything that I've heard from them, probably the most polished album by them, probably the most radio friendly. I understand completely why you would pick that one because it's right up your alley. The DAD album, Speed of Darkness, I think it's a good album. I think it's, again, they're not inventing anything new. If you like DAD, you're going to like this, like Metal Dan, who was looking to, order this from overseas. I'm going to give my tip of the hat to the Native Howl since you went with New Roses, just to give people something different to listen to. If you're not familiar with the band, it is acoustic. It has fiddles. It actually has some electric elements to it. It's a little different. And yeah, just to give them a shout out and have people check out both the New Roses and the Native Howl. How about that? All right, so let's move on to the 11th of October. We had new releases from The Offspring, Miles Kennedy, Jelly Roll, 1349, Vomit Forth, Fans of the Dark, 7 hours after Violet, the new side project from Shavo from System of a Down. That's one that I forgot to check out, which I will write down to listen to. Ad Infinitum, actually, Clean Break, The Crown, House of Lords, The Linda Lindas, Master Boot Record, Aranci's Pazuzu, Radioactive. I have 7 hours after Violet on here twice, so let me remove that. Cemetery Skyline. Shit, I really wanted to listen to that, and I didn't. Or did I listen to that? I think I may have. And Touche Amore. Jeremy, what did you listen to for this week?
Yeah, this particular week, I started off listening to Full Tilt Overdrive by House of Lords, the band from Connecticut, of course, formed by Greg Yuffura, that, you know, began sort of way back in the 1980s and reformed in 2000. This one is on the Frontiers label, and it's, you know, what I class as sort of decent hard rock with, you know, strong guitar, sort of perfectly adequate vocals from James Christian. I'd say, you know, not all of the tracks are truly great songs on this album, but, you know, the guitars are pretty strong. It's a pleasant listen overall. The best tracks for me on that were sort of Cry of the Wicked, the single Bad Karma, and the extended album closer Castles High. So I just kind of class that as fairly solid without being, you know, too into it. Also on Frontiers was the album Video by Fans of the Dark. This band was formed in 2020 in all places, of course, of Sweden, where just about every other band seems to come from these days. This is all sort of fun, poppy, early Europe, AOR style rock, just the sort of thing you might imagine from Swedish Pretenders. And it will get slated for being very dated, and it's kind of far too safe. Would be sort of fair criticisms, I guess. I can almost hear the vomit gurgling up, Victor, when I tell you that one of the songs is called Let's Go to Rent a Video. But oh, wow. Let me put it out there. Sickening as it might be, the band can really sort of write a decent commercial song or two, even if they sound, you know, a bit of a throwback from Top of the Pops in 1982. So I'm not dismissing it. It's there for someone, and I quite enjoyed it. So okay. Talking of 80s influences, it brings me on to the Nordic Gothic, the debut album from the supergroup Cemetery Skyline. This has, you know, really sort of more than a passing reference to Sisters of Mercy and other sort of similar indie goth bands of old. It's really sort of described as a gothic death metal band and album, and, you know, sort of meeting of minds, really, with some various well-known band members from the Nordic mellow death scene. It's a real super listen, this one. I mean, you could criticize it for sounding a little bit samey, but I think they're sort of very well-written songs, expertly performed. It'll really appeal to that sort of niche of hard rockers that sort of veer into gothic sort of alternative indie music sometimes. It has sort of sizzling keyboards, very textured echoes on it, topped off with, you know, what I'd say is really sort of truly brilliant vocals of Michael Stanner. It's an album, you know, I've put on my purchase list already, and it's very easily my album of the week.
Okay. So I listened to a few different things here. I listened to the new album by Offspring, Supercharged. Really liked the singles that they released before the album came out. And I have to say, folks, probably the strongest songs off the album. So when people give kids a hard time for streaming, it's your perfect example as to why I don't, because this saved me a lot of money. I ended up with three songs in my 2024 playlist off of this album: Light It Up, Come to Brazil, which were leading singles, and then Hanging by a Thread. There's really nothing else off of it that I felt worthy enough to either get in my 2024 playlist or in my Offspring playlist. So they've come a long way from their last great album, which to me was Splinter, and that was 20 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. I listened to Crown of Thorns by The Crown. I like the album, but it starts to sound pretty samey after a while. And it's still good, but I wish it was a little bit more diverse. The Touche Amore spiral in a straight line is not bad. Very punk feeling to it. Very 80s British feel to it. But my album of the week is going to be the same as yours, Nordic Gothic by Cemetery Skylines. I did listen to this. I thought so. I didn't have it crossed off on the list, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure I listened to it. The singles were great leading up to it, and everything that I've heard off of the album, I really enjoyed. The interesting thing here is that the lead singer, who you mentioned before, is in I don't know how many bands at the moment. And he sings completely differently in every band. He's also in the Halo Effect with all these former members of In Flames. And if he sung the way that he does on Cemetery Skyline, I think I would like that music even more. But anyway, definitely an album to check out. I forgot to mention that there were EPs from One Line Drawing, 10 years, and live albums from Def Leppard and Stoner. Again, part of that whole Caius family tree. October 18th, we had new releases from Jerry Cantrell and Seferum, Escuela Grind, MC5, Cortez, Grand Magus, Fate, Frost, DGM, and Swallow the Sun. Jeremy, what did you listen to this week?
So I started off listening to Thieves and Charlatans by Cortez on the Ripple label. Thought that was quite a decent listen. It's a five-piece heavy stoner band from Boston. It's kind of varied its style a bit on this particular album. And that's sort of obvious when you compare the opener, Gimme Danger, which is sort of a lively classic rock song, the very sludgy second track, Leaders of Nobody, and then they kind of follow that up with a very sort of bouncy, almost Black Sabbath style riff on Stove Up, which has then it changes again with a sort of choppy chorus that sounds a little bit like Vandenberg's Moon Kings. So it all makes for a great song, and there's a good variation of song as well, so that's good. But they also have their own sound. So they keep to their own sound. So it's, it's one of those albums that has something for everyone, kind of deserves a few listens. So I quite enjoyed that. I moved on to Sunraven by the Swedish three-piece Grand Magus. I think it's Magus, is it? Or Magus? Don't know how the Swedes pronounce it. But anyway, it's on Nuclear Blast. And I know it's one that you've also listened to, Victor, so you'll probably chip in a minute. I can't say I've listened a lot to this band, before. I hadn't listen to a lot of their, the back catalogue, but I have gone back and listened to it since. I'm not entirely certain if I'm fully on board with the vocals of Jani Kristofferson, but I'm not saying I dislike his voice. I just haven't made up my mind on it yet. It's one of those. But I do like the album a lot. It has those sort of classic rock and metal elements and sort of melds them together into a sort of a great listen. Has a nice bouncy feel to it. Has a solid mix. It's good production on it. Has that sort of quality of a new Wobbon band sometimes as well. Sort of, it's got that rawness, but has sort of heaps of melody as well. And they managed to sort of carve out a sound all of their own as well, which I kind of applaud. And I did enjoy it. It was great. So I moved on to Shining by Swallow The Sun on Century Media. This is a death doom band from Finland, a genre I kind of seem to be warming to. I think it's maybe the dark nights going on here in the UK. It's making me listen to that sort of stuff. It's harking back to that indie goth sound of old I kind of liked as well. Whatever it is, it's a good listen. You know, it's got the band's got a wealth of albums behind it now, and I think they're a little bit more accessible than bands like Iotun or Witherfall. I think you know, they've got some good melodies. I liked Melancholy, which I thought was almost like a ghost song. I think they'd certainly cover that one really well. Very brooding, you know, and a nice eerie sort of, like, there's even a bit of sort of modern Queensryche on the song called Cold with a K. Had a bit of a growly twist on there as well. And I think, you know, there's twists and turns on this album. I think it's quite exceptional in its artistry. It sort of draws you in. And you kind of enjoy it without any interruptions. It's one of those you just want to listen to from start to finish. I liked it a lot, but I think if I'm really honest, I will go for the Grand Makers album as my album of the week, but that one came a close second.
Okay. So I listened to the Escuela Grind, which is a full-on mix of hardcore punk and some noise rock to it. Not bad. I mean, there's a few tracks that I enjoyed. Not something that I would reach to all the time, but I did enjoy the release. I really enjoyed Sun Raven by Grand Magus, and I don't know if it's Magus or Magus either. I used to say Magus until Mark corrected me one time. Interestingly enough, I believe the current singer of Firewind used to be in this band, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. I know that there's if it's not the current singer of Firewind, it was one of their previous singers anyway. But man, I Want Blood from Jerry Cantrell. Love this album. For everyone that sits here and says, I don't know, without Lane, they're not this, they're not that. I listened to Cantrell on the new Metallica podcast, him and Robert Trujillo, who also appears on this album, talk in depth about it, which was a really cool listen. So if you haven't heard that, I do recommend it. I did pre-order this on vinyl. We'll be picking it up shortly. So it is my album of the week, and it is Jerry being Jerry without being full on Alice in Chains, if that's a way of describing it. I mean, obviously his voice is his own, but it's doing stuff that he really doesn't do all that often, or if ever, in Alice in Chains. And my number two would have been the Grand Magus, so or Grand Magus. So so we've got all bases covered there. and then the final week of October, the 25th, had new releases from Artreyu, Loud Blast, 311, which that date may have been moved because I can't find that album. Devin Townsend, Annihilator, but not the Annihilator from Canada. This is Annihilator with one N. Underdogs, Trucker Diablo, Ares Descendant, Cassandra's Crossing, Doug Pinnick, Fit for an Autopsy, Iotun, League of Distortion, Mindless Sinner, Pixies, Turmoin, Catalote, Kings of Mercia, EPs from Entheos, Dance with Dead, Asking Alexandria, and Enforced, reissues from Green Day and Rat, live album from Behemoth, and compilations from Him, Motorhead, and various artists with the American Psycho comic series soundtrack. So, Jeremy, what did you listen to for the final week of October?
Yeah, I should have listened to the Rat album. I don't know whether that's a remaster. Hopefully it is a remaster, and I'm going to have a listen to that in due course. We all know how good that album is anyway, so I didn't need to listen to it as sort of new music goes. But I started out the week listening to the thrash album Death Is Calling from Annihilator, which, as you mentioned, okay. It's a different band. It's a different spelling to the Canadian band Annihilator. This is the one from Texas that started out 37 years ago, apparently, and returned in 2015 after disbanding for many years. It's actually a 7-song album of just 33 minutes of music. But as you've often mentioned sometimes, you know, less is more. Yep. So more of an EP than an LP, I guess. But it's all, you know, very typical melding of all the various thrash elements you'd expect. Brutal riffs, fast-paced drumming. There's even a sort of Priest-like metronomic blast of Iron Grinder to get your teeth into. It's unrelenting. It's unreconstructed. It's powerful anvil-grinding, bone-crushing metal, I'd say. And it truly hits the spot. I really enjoyed it. And I suggest the listener goes out and have a listen to it. It's good. Next up, I listened to Power Nerd by the prolific Devin Townsend, his 12th studio release now under his own name, because he's done other stuff as well, as we know. And I can't say, you know, I'm much of an expert in his music, and I've not been that much of a particular fan in the past either, so I'll be honest with you. But, you know, it's a really nice listen. It's got, you know, quite a bit of variation in styles. It keeps you sort of hanging in for, you know, a longer listen, which I like about albums sometimes. I like the song Gratitude. You know, it has sort of parts that are very Pink Floyd, interspersed with sort of a great stadium-friendly chorus, I think. That was one of the highlights for me. And it didn't overstay its welcome as well. You know, sometimes bands or artists like that can sort of go on a little bit, and that sort of, you know, is a perfect song. The opening title track adds a bit of pace. I like that, and I like Glacier. I thought that was a, you know, brooding, atmospheric sort of combining of, you know, acoustic and electric guitars to very good effect. Some fine melodies on that, and a good sort of crescendo as well. So yeah, it was a decent listen. Not my normally my sort of thing, but very enjoyable. A big shout out to Nine Ties by the Italian stoner rock band Underdogs. They seem to be back after a decade break. Well worth a listen. But it wasn't my album of the week. That goes to Social Hand Grenade by the Irish new wave of classic rock band Trucker Diablo. They've now released 6 studio albums since 2010. This is all sort of heavy-hitting riffs, solid production. It's good time rock and roll. Very much in the style, I'd say, of Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, you know, that sort of music. Apparently they've spent quite a long time, going over this album, producing it and coming up with the songs. And it, for the most part, that shows as well. Occasionally they dial it down. Sometimes they do sound a little bit like every other band out there. But they certainly know how to write a decent rock song as well. I'd very much like to see them live. And hey, presto, they're headlining Rockwich Festival next August in my hometown. So there you go. There's a great opportunity for me. I've got no excuse. I should go and see them. Solid stuff. Album of the week, Trucker Diablo.
All right, cool. For me, let's see. I listened to the Iotan album, Kinship. I really enjoyed their previous release, but I have to be honest, this release bored me. It was just very long, drawn out, and kind of samey. I listened to Doug Pinnick's latest solo album, Thingamajigger, and it was okay, respectable, has some pretty cool tracks off of it. Also listened to the Devin Townsend Power Nerd. With Devin, I either really like what he releases or I really don't care for it. This has a few good songs on it, but the rest is, we've kind of been here before. We've heard all this before. So There's really not much more for me to kind of enjoy with it. I'm going to go with Cassandra's Crossing and Garden of Earthly Delights. This is a George Lynch project with a female singer. And I should have been better prepared for this. Let's see if this comes up here. I guess that was the name of a movie as well from the 70s. Look at that. Okay, so when you're not looking for a video, a bunch of videos pop up. Cassandra Carson is her name. Anyway, if by any chance you're missing George really doing Dokken-like material, this is the album for you, because it's George really playing in that style with a singer that has an upper registry and can pull off a lot of that stuff. I don't know if he's going to tour behind this or not. But if he does, he's got a singer that can do that early Dokken without really struggling. So it'd be interesting to see if he does anything with her or not. Anyway, so yeah, so those are our recommendations. Let's just run down Jeremy and my recommendations real quickly. For October 10th, Jeremy did say The New Roses with Attracted to Danger. I said The Native Howl, Sons of Destruction. For October 11th, let's see, Jeremy did say Cemetery Skyline, which I agreed with. For the 18th, Jeremy said Grand Magus with Sunraven, and I said Jerry Cantrell, I Want Blood. And for the final week of October, the 25th, let's see here, Jeremy went with Trucker Diablo and Social Hand Grenade. And let's see here, I mentioned Cassandra's Crossing with Garden of Earthly Delights. And as usual, Jeremy and I love discussing music, love discussing different topics. So there are a few other things that we are going to discuss now. Jeremy, you wanted to talk about the 1988 show since you were not present. What did you think of the countdown when you listened to it? Did you get that emoji losing its mind when you found out what the number one was?
Well, of course, you know, it's, you're expecting a variation on these kind of shows. It's not going to be the one that you sent in. It's going to be an aggregate of everybody. And you know, I can't really, when I reflect on it, I kind of, you know, I was kind of shocked that Iron Maiden were not number one. But then I thought, well, right, you know, number one was Metallica. I mean, hey, right, you know, it's going to be Metallica, Iron Maiden, or Queensryche, I guess. I mean, as I've said to you, you know, I'm not a huge fan of that particular Queensryche album. I prefer Empire myself, but I get that, you know, everybody loves it, and I get that it's so popular amongst, you know, Queensryche fans and the broad sort of metal church of fans. I was quite surprised that Iron Maiden didn't get to number one, because I agree with you. You mentioned this on the show, that it really is probably their best album. You know, if you think about it, there aren't any fillers on that album. Whereas if you go through most of their catalog, there's great songs on every album. We love Iron Maiden. You know, Iron Maiden have got 5-6 brilliant songs on every album, but they never really did an album that sounded so complete. And this was the most, this was a peak in their career. And, you know, what's happened is that, you know, on previous years that you've done these, they've been number one every time. And this is the first time they've not been, when probably they've released their best album. So that was, yeah, that was probably something I was shouting from the rooftops.
Yeah, I was surprised, as I mentioned, when I saw early on that they weren't going to be number one, I was like, whoa. Either something turns around real quickly or the streak is broken. And I thought to myself, I'm like, well, there's, you know, there's still enough time to go where people could vote for it. But then I started to see that people were leaving this album off their lists altogether. And I was like, that's interesting. I know that we talked about the fact, for example, Ed and Anthony Mackie talked about the fact that some of these bands really started to drop off quality-wise around this point in time. I can see how after somewhere in time, some people would jump off the bandwagon because that's, I mean, out of Bruce and Adrian's original run with the band, Number of the Beast, Peace of Mind, Power Slave, Somewhere in Time, and Seventh Son. I think Somewhere in Time is easily their weakest album out of all of those, in my opinion, anyway. Seventh Son is, as you said, it's strong beginning to end. Moonchild, Infinite Dreams, Can I Play with Madness? The Evil That Men Do, Seven Son of a Seven Son, The Prophecy, the Clairvoyant, and Only the Good Die Young. This album, even though it's got some monstrously long songs, the album is done before you know it because it just goes down so easy. I was rooting for Queensryche to come in number two because I thought, I was like, well, it's a foregone conclusion. You know, this fan base is going to vote for Maiden. And then I'm hoping that Queensryche is two. And then for the longest time, Maiden and Queensryche were going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I was like, well, you know, it might be kind of cool if the Queensryche album perseveres. But then on the last day, I received, I think, like four different people's votes. And it was apparent at that time that that Queensryche was not going to get number two. I don't know why, but this isn't loading for me. I want to see.
I'm just thinking there's two ways to judge an album. You're judging an album now as you've listened to it, you know, in the past week again, you know, after a long time where you probably haven't listened to the album, or you're judging the album as you received it back in that particular year.
Right.
And there's two ways to think about these things, because I think sometimes a particular album can make a massive hit on you in the year that it was released. Or you're listening to it again and you think, fuck me, that album is so good. And it's got to wear well, hasn't it? Because an 80s album will have 80s production. But if you listen to Seventh Son, I think it's worn so well. I mean, it sounds so good today as it did back then, whereas some of the albums, you know, that you went through on that particular show, the production on them probably sounds quite 80s.
Right They sound dated. Also there's certain albums that are kind of the opposite for me, and I mentioned this on on the air and on my Patreon show, where Second Sighting by Fraley's Comet loved back in the day. And now it's an album that I hardly listen to anything off of because I just don't think it's that good. I don't think it's aged well.
Yeah.
There's so much material there, though, that did. I think that there's a lot of good music that came out that easily is you know, you see some of these albums and you realize, like, oh yeah, yeah, there's a reason why that is included. There's a reason, you know. There are others. Yeah, yeah. I mean, personally, I didn't get why so many people voted for Bon Jovi's New Jersey, but I get it.
Well, it was a big seller, huge seller, and it had so many hits.
I guess so. But I'm, yeah, for some reason okay, so here it goes. It's loading up for me now. What's the difference here?
A similar type of album that I voted on, which didn't even feature in the top 10, I didn't expect it to, was the Europe album, Out of This World, which is an absolute super AOR soft rock album. I mean, I think it's probably better than the Final Countdown overall, because there's so many great songs on it. But I understand it, because it's not a hard-hitting, it's not a heavy metal album, it's not really a classic rock album in many respects. But it's still, you know, it means something to me, and I like it. I can pick it up and listen to it, and it's very 80s, it's got an 80s sound to it, you know, and it does sound a little dated, but the song, you know, amazing on it. And again, you know, David Lee Roth, I think me and you agree that we like that album, but not everyone sort of considers it. It's one of those that passes people by, but we like the, you know, the David Lee Roth solo stuff. It had something about it.
Yeah, I think that album gets a bad rap. Like I said, I mentioned this on the Patreon show. It's pretty solid. You know, a lot of people would say, oh no, he was trying to go too commercial and it sounds kind of disco-y. And outside of the song, Just Like Paradise and the acoustic ballad, Good Times Is a Call, I don't remember, but it's the end of side one, if I'm not mistaken. Those are the two singles off of it, and those are the only two kind of commercial songs off of that album, I think. So I've always thought it was better. I think it's better than OU812. I think it's a lot better than OU812. But you know, hey, everyone votes for what they think is right. The Europe album ended up being number 26 out of This World. I have a few albums that made the top 10. I voted for the Metallica, the Iron Maiden, the Queensryche, the Ozzy, the Halloween, the Anthrax. Scorpions. I voted for Scorpions. Yeah. Living Color.
Interesting. Yeah, just pick up on that Scorpions album, because, you know, Scorpions, as we know, have really released so many great albums before that album. So I think it might put some people off. I think if you listen to it in isolation and pretend that Scorpions never released any other albums before that, you'd probably think that that's a damn good album. Imagine if that was their debut album. It just came out that year. It'd probably be, you know, probably in the top three, because you'd think, wow, this band. Where they come from. But it's simply because you're comparing it to the old stuff and you're thinking, well, right, Blackout was better, Love Drive was better. And yeah, they probably were, but it's still on its own a super album, Savage Amusement. Really good. And it shows, you know, they had a run of a string of great albums, all, you know, one after the other at that time in the 80s and late 70s, yeah, of course.
And going into the 90s, I think Face the Heat isn't a bad album either. It's got some pretty good stuff on there. Crazy World is the one where, to me, they were trying to do Love at First Sting Part 2. They were trying to get too radio-friendly. They were trying to force, you know, they had gone like almost like in a slightly heavier direction. And then they came back with this, which was just straight up. Some of the songs, like the song Tease Me, Please Me, which I've always thought was horrible. It was, I was like, they don't need to be recording Poison. They, you know, they've done enough on their own that they don't need to glom off of what others are doing. Yeah, so I mean that album is, I think, is still really good.
It's also an interesting time, wasn't it? Time because you've got thrash metal coming in at the time where we're still listening to all that sort of solid classic rock, melodic, you know, classic rock and poppy rock even, and then you've got, you know, Metallica still quite early in their career there coming out with, you know, an album that is hit number one because people love it. They love the songs on it. The production, as we know, you know, leaves a bit to be desired, I think. But they've got some solid songs on there that appear still in their live act today. And they were, you know, forging their way, weren't they? Their, what they do, you know, what they do best. And so although it still surprised me that it hit number one, I, on the other side, I can see because a lot of people love the fact that thrash came in at that time and, you know, was taking over. We got Overkill as well that were doing it at the time, and they were high up on the list, I think, as well.
Yeah, well, thrash related bands, Metallica was number one, Megadeth was four, Slayer was five, Testament was seven, there Anthrax is nine, Suicidal Tendencies is 10. Helloween, who's known more for their power metal, I guess. I mean, what always appealed to me about those albums is that it was kind of a mix between thrash metal and new album metal. So it was, to me, it was Anthrax or Megadeth meets Maiden or Judas Priest, where sure, both of those bands influenced the thrash bands we're talking about, but it was adding double bass elements, certain synchronized guitar playing that lent itself to thrash metal more so than Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. So,
there's some interesting comments from your patrons as well. I mean, I think it was Ed who said about the Testament album that, you know, he's looking forward to hearing the remastered version. I think that will really be good on a remastered issue, and I think it's out now, isn't it? And I need to really get hold of that because I like that album a lot, but it's just the production and the way it's recorded that puts you off a little bit. And I think if they've done a remaster version, I'm hoping it'll sound a lot better.
It's supposed to. I don't know if it ends up doing the job or not, but it's supposed to sound better. I know that was a gripe that the band had. At least when I interviewed Chuck Billy back in the day, he just did not like how their first few albums sounded. And the label appointed a producer, and the producer basically said, you know, hey, it's my way or else. And they couldn't do anything else. And Chuck Billy, when I interviewed him, mentioned how they could listen to the Metallica album or other albums from their contemporaries, and the album sounded timeless, where you listen to their album and it sounded dated and very 80s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. Yeah. I think that's a vinyl only release as well. So that should be interesting to hear.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Anything else that you wanted to discuss before we wrap things up here?
I think that was it, really. I mean, it kind of got me onto what we just mentioned, really, with the Testament album. I think there's a lot of albums that came out in the 80s, and not just that particular year, that are ripe for remastering, and in some cases, right, re-recording as well. I like, mm-hmm, you know, I know some people sort of say, why are they re-recording an album with the new band? And, you know, because we want to hear that particular album sounding great today as it's recorded, mm-hmm, with the instruments and the recording equipment today, because we know that sounds better. You know, technology has moved on. So I think there's a lot of call for remastering, and we've seen it with Judas Priest with the very first album, Rock and Roller, that just came out recently. A lot of the fans are saying, you know, it's great that that's been remastered. They like some of the songs on it. They know it's, you know, a band in its sort of formation and, you know, its early days, you know, just sort of stepping their toes in the water, but it's better to have a better sounding album than the original, you know, if you can do it well. And, you know, I listened to the Queen album recently and the Queen One, and it's fantastic what they've done to it. Really good sound. And, you know, I think that they could do it more, really. I know, you know, a lot of people don't want to fork out money for albums like that, but if you like a particular album and you want a new copy of it and something that sounds good, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the labels know that. That's why, as we were talking about off air, that's why vinyl stores keep creeping up and popping up in different cities and places around the world.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. You know, and long live the vinyl as well, I think. But, you know, you've got to move with the times. You've got to record new stuff for people. And don't forget, there's a new generation of fans. So if they're going to listen to something, they don't want to listen to something that sounds tinny. You know, it was recorded in 1980, whatever, and it was great songs, but it didn't have a great sound. They want to hear great sound as well because they're used to good technology, and why not re-record it, get young fans into it, and keep rock and roll alive, keep it going. Beyond me and you, Victor, we need our kids to be into rock and metal forevermore.
There you go. I couldn't have said that better myself. And I think what just happened? I should have had that ready. Anyway, Jeremy, I do want to thank you for joining me tonight. It is always fun. Please check out all of the other monthly album reviews that Jeremy and I have done. They're a worthy listen. It'll help you get up to speed when casting your votes for the end of the year. We've got one more month to go. December usually doesn't have too many new releases. So once December rolls around, we'll do a list of releases for probably just the first half of November, because the second half is usually dead. Unless an AC/DC or a Metallica or somebody like that releases a surprise album. But I think Linkin Park has just done that. I think they've released something on Monday. So we'll see. I'll have to look into that. In any event, thank you guys for checking this episode out. Thank you once again to Jeremy for joining me. And we hope you enjoy the episode. We will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.